America, to all of our listeners all around the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, Brandon Perkins. And joining me, as always, is Chris Helige and Teresa Salmon. Say hi to the guys, folks.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, Teresa's back with us. She's been gone for a couple weeks. And now the dog has gotten woken up, apparently. That's fine. We'll deal with that. But, this episode is going to be for June 11th, 2022. It is hot as balls outside, and it's only going to get hotter. because, according to the forecast, at least for my part of Georgia, it is not going to be any lower than 90. The high isn't. For the next foreseeable future. And, what I've been hearing, it's also starting to get hot in some other places as well. This week we will be talking about, among some of the bigger stories we'll be talking about is, of course, the January 6th committee deposition that happened, I think it was Thursday, wasn't it? Yeah, it was Thursday evening. It pretty much went exactly as you thought it would, and it doesn't really leave much room to doubt anymore. And, there's some other stuff involved, too. We got some other legal things, including a federal judge ruling on the constitutionality of lethal injection. The guys who create the taser had a really bad idea that they thought was a really good idea, and then actually introduced it into the wild, and it got so bad that they basically fired their entire ethics board. We'll tell you about that. Geico also may have to pay over $5 million to a woman who, did not have a good time in one of their insured cars. And then we got a bunch of entertainment stuff, including Geek Tweet from Netflix, who gave us a bunch of trailers for some of their projects coming out. And we also got a new Disney piece as well. But before we get to all that, let's start off as we always do. Talk about the type of stuff we've been doing up to this point. So, Chris, you start us off. What have you been doing this week?
Not too much. I've been just working on Summer Game Fest stuff this week. So just been doing a bunch of that stuff, but yeah, managed to get around to watching the newest episode of the Obi-Wan show, which is going all right. I think a problem with some of these shows, especially the Star Wars stuff, is kind of the week-to-week waiting doesn't always help with their story stuff. I don't know. It sometimes just makes me wonder if the Star Wars shows would do better with more of a dump of everything.
Well, they want to drag out the popularity for the full six weeks since three episodes dropped at once.
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of that stuff, as they're just doing more stuff there as Obi-Wan does his thing. So there you go. But I did get to watch the first episode of Ms. Marvel, and I really like it a lot so far. It's got a very nice, posy vibe to it. The also does a good job of, you know, showing a positive Muslim family in a major show.
Yeah.
That you don't see very much of that. As these are Pakistani Muslims, Americans. And yeah, kind of does a lot of the stuff you expect out of, you know, Kamala Khan. Show is this first episode's about her wanting to go to the first Avenger Con and trying to scheme ways of doing that as all that kind of stuff, and ends with her discovering the powers that she has as there's kind of just some, there's a little bit of weird writing where people keep telling her like, what do you want to be? That kind of shit, like, as she is very much kind of a head in the clouds kind of girl. So much so that they even do some good bits where she's in talking to her counselor and looks over the clock and the hands are spinning.
Yeah.
As she's unable to even focus on basic things like that at times at least. But yeah, that seems good. Looking forward to see more of that. And yeah, I finished up The Floor is Lava season 2. It's not too long. It's like maybe 5 or 6 episodes, but it does a good job with the improvements to the way the framework is all set up there. And yeah, especially the last episode's pretty fun. As it's all influencers of a sort, just three different sort of stereotype groups of that sort. It's just fun to see how they all interact, that kind of thing. But yeah, that's good. And for games I've been watching or playing, there's Rocket League, still playing along with that as I am, you know, waiting for the next season to start here in a few days. They talked a bit about what season 7's doing, so looking forward to that. Been playing some. I picked up Lego Star Wars: The Skywalker Saga, the big ass Lego game that covers all 9 of the main Star Wars movies.
Yep,
and it is such a ridiculous game. So the way you would play the other Lego games, essentially just run around the levels and break everything, get all the studs you can to spend on unlocks and all that kind of stuff. Here, a lot of those areas will just keep respawning that stuff over and over again. And it essentially creates a bunch of little mini open world areas for you to explore and find these like ghost pieces. Ghost bricks, I think they call them, that then you can use for upgrading your stats, I guess. They have like a skill tree of sorts for that, where, you know, it's like, oh, add more health. You know, another heart of health kind of thing. Or, you know, let the studs, you know, warp to you from further away, that kind of stuff. That's just weird to see in a Lego game. Then there's the whole process of unlocking different characters, which some are just based on the story as they appear. Others, you kind of have to do weird puzzles and side quest stuff for them and all this kind of weird stuff. And you can spend your studs on unlocking the rumor for how to do it, for where to go and how to do it. And there's, it's kind of ridiculous. So I was, where I stopped, I started in the first movie because that was a decent place to start. And that I'm still on Tatooine. No, I just got to Coruscant to meet Palpatine and all that. And yeah, like the things they do sort of leading up to these places are sort of the main weird little levels that they like score you on and all that. That helps you unlock ships and all that kind of stuff. That, yeah, it's just, it's such a huge bloated game. No matter the price you pay, you can absolutely get that much value out of it for that. So that's the part of it that is potentially worth it. But yeah, like the amount of stuff I did on Tatooine, just looking for, you know, ghost bricks and finding these side quests. And you run into a lot of stuff where it shows you just icons that you don't know what the fuck that means. And it's usually referring to categories of characters. There's a bunch like, oh, you have to get, I think, scavengers for some of this to climb up certain types of obstacles. And there's, you need to have protocol droids to speak to aliens that don't speak English. Sometimes they say normal things. Other times they say, like, hints for puzzles and such. There's a lot of people you can talk to and do a bunch of side stuff. One of them was just weird, like after coming out of the finishing up the big pod race and you know, freeing Anakin from slavery. There was this puzzle where essentially you use one of the Jedi to fit these pipes into these spots. And they're kind of freeform in the way you could do it a little bit, but there's a specific solution. And it was the most frustrating controls I could see, because you're using the left and right sticks, which means the camera just goes to shit if you're not sure where you're going. So a lot of times I'm trying to move stuff around and just having a really frustrating time with it, which means I was definitely going to finish it just to be fucking done with it. But yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff to it. It's a pretty cool package, but it just kind of has a little bit too much content in there. A little too much obsessiveness to give you busy work and bullshit to do to unlock everything, which I don't think any sane person should do. But yeah, that's that. And the only other thing I've really been playing is doing some demo videos of various Summer Game Fest demos that have been out on Steam and such. And there's some really cool stuff there. And there's one that I think especially would be a very Teresa game. It's called A Little to the Left. It's an indie game about, you know, unpacking?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really chill.
Yeah. Imagine that, but it's more small organizational puzzles instead of just like unpack all this shit and figure out where to put it. It's more organizational puzzle, like, oh, straighten out your like scrap drawer of random shit, you know, your scissors and all this shit in there. Or here's these pencils you have, organize them, or set your table kind of thing. Occasionally, while you're doing this, trying to do this stuff, a cat will just come and fuck it all up.
Yeah.
Doing the setting the table with the table mat, a plate, and, you know, a knife and a fork. And, like, trying to set that up, and a cat just came and just fucking pulled it away.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time I'd try and do that, so I had to, like, be like, all right, set up as fast as possible, wait for the cat to try and come in and fuck it up, and then pull it away from him. Mm-hmm. It would come from different angles, too, so it's not just, like, a predictable thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a game where there's, like, that aspect to it. Occasionally a cat might just come up and say, oh, you were doing work here? Fuck you. I'm going to sit here and bully you. Until you figure out how to avoid the bully, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that kind of game that is just a fun little thing. It has a demo on Steam. Definitely worth checking out for that. And yeah, that's a game that I was kind of surprised to see how well it works, where it's kind of this fairly simple puzzle game, but some of the puzzles have multiple solutions
mm-hmm.
for them, as they'll, when you complete, it'll show you, like, oh, you got, you know, one of the three solutions. So you might be tempted to go back and be like, all right, so what's another way of doing this? And getting that kind of thing. And as well, I think there's supposed to be much more stuff to it. So
mm-hmm.
that was the one that was very much a highlight of what I played. Yeah. Games that are maybe, I just show you stuff to do and doesn't explain what the solution is. You just kind of have to interact with it and figure out, like, okay, this seems to be a thing I can do. So let's try... Mm-hmm. See what that goes. Like the organizing the junk drawer thing was especially fun because it was like this elaborate sort of tray that everything went into, but you've seen this mess of shit. You're like, where the fuck does any of this go?
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of work your way through it and you figure it out. It's like, oh, this was a really clever puzzle kind of thing. So yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Teresa?
Yeah, Teresa, your turn.
Well, currently, I am right now playing A Little to the Left,
mm-hmm.
because why not? And yeah, it's pretty cool looking so far.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been playing Final Fantasy 14 for the most part this past week, trying to get back into that. Got a little more done on the MSQ, but mostly it's been watching stuff. So Obi-Wan also, I've watched the first four episodes of that. I'm kind of like, how are they going to wrap it up in the next two? Because it's only six episodes, I believe, right? And
might be five. I forget.
Oh, is it really? Oh, God. Mm-hmm. I definitely want more of it, but, you know, they were saying that less is better with Vader, you know, that kind of thing. That's why he's not on screen so much. But yeah, I understand why it's going to be so short.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. I'm really digging it. But more than that, even Strange New World. I think I've already told you guys I was watching that. I watch it every Thursday night. That's the only thing that I'm like right on top of. Because it's great. It's the new Star Trek. It's with Captain Pike, who is the predecessor for Captain Kirk, commanding the Enterprise. And this week's episode was just, it's Star Trek. It's Star Trek.
Mm.
They had a lot to say on social issues, and it did it. We also realized that we fell behind with Ted Lasso. So we've been trying to catch up on that. But I've been watching just a bunch of reruns, obviously always with SpongeBob, always watching SpongeBob. Shin-Chan, Are You Being Served? Watching Beavis and Butthead. I know you guys talked about the little movie or whatever that's coming out soon.
Mm-hmm.
But I was trying to watch Beavis and Butthead on Paramount, and it doesn't have the music, just like, you know, wherever you stream Daria, the music in the background isn't there. But with Beavis and Butthead, the music videos were so much a part of the actual cartoon that it feels wrong without it. So there are places to find them where basically it's a grassroots thing where people have either gotten it off of videotapes that they had or something. But anyway, I was able to go back and watch it with the actual music videos, and it feels complete. You know, it feels complete watching it that way. But I've been getting blasted off into orbit a little bit too much and watching a lot of YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
like way too much YouTube, and especially Idiots in Cars. So, you know, where somebody just goes and harvests a bunch of people's videos from probably Imgur, Reddit, wherever they're posting it, of little car crashes and people who don't know how to drive and end up flipping over. And then they compile it all into a weekly video and probably make a decent amount of money off of YouTube doing it. You know, I mean, all power to them. I'm kind of in awe that somebody figured out how to do it, and it's probably almost automated. So people are cool. Making money is cool. And then we were out shopping today, which we haven't been doing a lot of because obviously gas prices are astronomical. They are $5.85 near me a gallon. So not going out too much. But when we were there, I noticed a line in a crowd over by the van store, and I'm like, well, I don't need socks. What the hell's going on over there? Why are people standing there? And it's a Stranger Things store. And I'm like, okay, you're lined up to go in the store about Stranger Things. We never did start watching again after season one was over, so we don't know anything about what's been going on. But apparently there's like photo opportunities in there and whatnot. They've got the couch from the kids' house with the ABCs and the Christmas lights and shit. Mm. And one of my old coworkers posted on my page that her kids loved it and sent a picture along with them sitting on the couch, cheesing away. So I guess that's a thing, but COVID transmission rates are really high here, and it was kind of a little warm, and I didn't really want to wear my mask a lot, so I didn't stand in line with them and wait around and go in and see what the big deal was. But just, you know, there is now a Stranger Things store that will probably last for all of about 5 months and be gone, if that long. But other than being cynical about everything in the world, including the lifespan of that Stranger Things store, that's what I've been doing. What about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I finished Danganronpa 2. That game ends on a weird note, but it definitely sets up material for the sequel. But that's all about that. So, in the meantime, until, you know, the next big game comes out that I can play, I've started playing, well, replaying Mass Effect Andromeda on my my absolutely, you know, my Xbox Series S, which I love now. Mm. And, yeah. By the way, if you have not played Mass Effect Andromeda yet and you're kind of, like, still itching for the next Mass Effect game, you can go ahead and play this now. They've basically fixed all the problems that the original launch had. All the graphics have been, you know, they fixed all the graphical errors and stuff like that. But it's also still very much a Mass Effect game made with the Frostbite engine, which means that there are still bits and pieces of it that are a little robotic. but yeah, you know, with once you get are able to like get past the issues the original game had, it's a very solid Mass Effect game. Now, is it necessarily as good as the original trilogy? Well, that's debatable. They definitely seem to kind of recycle some of the plot points from the original trilogy. But, you know, like there's a place that's basically Omega, which in the Mass Effect games, Omega is like this space station that was taken over by gangsters. So it's sort of like, you know, that one place in Star Wars. You know, they also have their own version of the Citadel, which is called the Nexus. But, you know, it's got some other stuff that's actually legitimately interesting about it. The fact that, you know, in that game, you're not a soldier like, you know, like Commander Shepard is. You are a, you know, an explorer, a pioneer. You know, you're a settler. That's sort of the whole point of the Andromeda game, is that you're settling a new galaxy that you come across. And so there's a big part of the game is you trying to making all the planets that like are possibly habitable, making them more habitable as you get to them, so that more settlers can, you know, be awakened and allowed to settle. Because they're all like in cryo sleep at that point. Yeah, it's a lot of fun issues it had when it first came out, and that's basically the reason why there's no DLC for this game, like, at all. And it's very clear that they were intending some sort of downloadable content when you play it, because there are definitely parts of it where it's like, yeah, they were obviously wanting to expand upon this, but the game kind of bombed when it came out, so, you know. I'm hoping that the next Mass Effect game, that they'll actually find ways to tie it into Andromeda, because there's parts of the story that I want settled. next up, after that, I've also been playing a visual novel. I'd been meaning to get to it, but I hadn't really had the time. It's the newest part of the When They Cry series, which is, you know, Higurashi, When They Cry, and Unimeko. It's called Chaconia. And if you've not played the other When They Cry games, you really should, because, first of all, they're really good visual novels, but also because they actually do kind of tie in together, believe it or not, even though in some ways they're all markedly different genre-wise. But because, you know, Ryukishi 07, the guy who writes these, he's really good at, like, taking these sort of generic anime tropes and twisting them into some really dark directions. Like Higurashi, When They Cry, it takes the sort of idyllic, sort of nostalgic slice of life type series and then sort of twists it into something extremely terrifying when you realize that you're basically trapped in a Groundhog's Day where everybody dies over and over and over again. And then Unimeko, When They Cry, which is very much a sort of, you know, Victorian-style gothic mystery story, murder mystery, that is then twisted around to show that there's some serious freaking witchcraft going underneath the series that may or may not be ending the world. Well, Chaconia basically takes place after the epilogue of Unimeko, in which it has now been a couple of hundred years since World War III. Yes, you heard me say three. And basically, like, all of the world's sort of major powers have reorganized themselves into, like, various super nations. And they are basically living in a world where not only has the population been decreased drastically because of the war, but their environment is like in a position where it's like it could collapse at any moment. Literally the only thing that is keeping, literally the only thing that's actually keeping the ozone intact in this world is the nano machines that they released into the atmosphere. So literally it's the only thing that's keeping everything together. And basically what happens here is, Ryukishi 07 took another anime trope, which is the sort of militarized moe action girl. Well, you know the type of anime I'm talking about. Stuff like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Where it's like, oh, they're child soldiers with heavy military gear and stuff. And, yeah, they tie into that whole idea. It's like, yeah, what's it like to be a child soldier that's basically an artificial human in this universe? It's actually rather terrifying, as you would expect. So that's what I've been playing. As for books, you know, I'm still doing my reading. I went back, because I had been kind of sidetracked recently, but I started reading again, When a Darkness Falls by Paul Zindel. As I mentioned the last time when we were talking about this, Paul Zindel was a guy who originally got his start as a playwright who won the Pulitzer Prize back in the mid-60s for one of his plays, and then an editor came up and said if he had any stuff for young people, and so he basically became like one of those writers that if you took like a, you know, took a literature class in high school, it was almost absolutely pretty much guaranteed that you were going to read one of his books. And usually it was going to be his first book, which was The Pig Man. And he's actually was one of the writers I really loved when I was in high school, because he actually like wrote stories about like actual teenagers dealing with like actual stuff they would have to deal with, like, you know, drugs or relationships or, you know, stuff like that. And he did it in a realistic way that, you know, made it not as the sort of saccharine crap you'd get from someplace like, I don't know, The Babysitter's Club or any of that stuff.
Right.
Yeah. But he wrote one book in his entire career that was specifically meant for adults. And that's When a Darkness Falls, which is a novel, a suspense novel he wrote for adults. Most of his books, they tend to start off with like a monologue from a kid talking about like, I hate going to high school because I have to deal, you know, my mom has mental issues and I'm kind of the loner at school. Nobody understands me. When a Darkness Falls literally starts with a teacher going into the school animal hatchery and then having to tell children there that somebody butchered all of the animals inside of it. Yeah. That's how he starts.
It goes to 0 to 90.
Yeah, if that's chapter one. And I've heard that this is kind of this weird issue that writers who usually write for children and then decide to write something for adults tend to have. Because Judy Blume, you know who Judy Blume is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. She had the same issue when she published her first book, which is like about swingers. Her first adult book, which was literally about swingers. Yeah. Exactly. But I actually got sidetracked because I had actually gotten a hold of actually one of the last standalone book he wrote for young adults, which was called The Gadget, which is about a teenage kid who's going to see his estranged father, who is a professor working at Los Alamos in the 1940s. Gee, I wonder what The Gadget is supposed to be. He's working on the Manhattan Project. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And yes, he is there to witness it blow. So other than that, as far as also reading, going back into manga again, started reading City Hunter, which is one of those, like, classic 80s Shonen Jump comics that was like definitive of that era, especially its anime. Written by a guy named Tsukasa Hojo. It's basically a it's very reminiscent of that particular era because it's a combination of like gag and like hyper realism. Because it's essentially a story about a dude who works as like a fixer, who is also like just absolutely a ladies' man in like the worst way possible. So it's like his one weakness. It's actually really good, and it's pretty episodic too, which means that, you know, it's not, it's, it doesn't go on too long with any one plot point. So it's pretty consistently entertaining to read. But, yeah. So yeah, that's pretty much what I've been up to. You guys want to add anything else before we move on?
No.
Nope.
No? Okay. Well then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And I thought I'd just do something a little silly this week. So, I don't really know how to get into this without it sounding absolutely stupid and prurient, but I'll go ahead and just say it. Boobs are amazing things. They're fun to look at, and I guess not terribly fun to have if you actually have them, depending on the size, because I have been told that that can cause some back issues.
Can, but they're still fun.
Oh, yeah, they're a lot of fun. Extremely fun.
Like,
but,
that you wear, so.
Yeah.
I mean,
they do things.
That?
They're amazing. They hold, they have many, uses. God, this sounds so weird. And it turns out that, weirdly enough, depending on the size, one of those uses is they might wear it very well, save your life from a terrible collision. Because, there are not one, but two recorded instances of a woman managing to save herself from a very bad car accident simply because she had enough, shall we say, cushioning on, huh, from the booba. Oh, yes. So, yeah, so very quickly, I'm going to talk about the two incidences, the real-world incidences, and I swear, neither one of these are fake. These actually happened. One of them is from an completely anonymous woman who actually probably kind of has an issue with body image. And the other one is about a woman who is naturally gifted and, well, you'll see what I mean. Okay, so the first was a woman by the name of, and I actually pulled this from like an old crack article, like really like all the way back to 2009. But it goes like this. She was a woman named Elena Marinova. And she had that whole, she had kind of a body image issue and kind of, I guess, what they used to call A cup angst, which is like,
yeah,
my boobs are too small and I want them bigger. So she went and got, you know, a breast enlargement, which is perfectly fine. Nothing wrong with getting a breast enlargement if that's something you want. She got 40 D double Ds.
Yeah, she went all the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She went probably a little overboard. Because you think at that point, it's like, wow, her is like, I hope she wears it, why she's going to tip over. But, yeah. But, so yeah, she, as you can probably tell from her name, she's from the, from a, Eastern Bloc type place. And basically the story goes is that in, the city of Rus, which I believe is somewhere in Belarus, she was driving, no, it's in Bulgaria, sorry, it's in Bulgaria. She was driving her car, and she ended up getting in a head-on collision with another vehicle. Now, both cars were totaled completely, just, it was unsalvageable. You know, might as well send the whole thing to the scrapyard. And yet, of the two people involved in it, she was the only one to walk away mostly uninjured. Why? According to police, Her oversized fun bags basically cushioned her from the impact exactly the same manner as an airbag does. Unfortunately, even though it cushioned the blow, it did not keep the silicone intact because basically they exploded.
Could be a problem.
Yeah. That's some. I probably shouldn't laugh, but somehow that's just hilarious. But now we have the other incident of this point. This is actually a woman who is actually kind of famous. Her name is Petra Verkite. She was a former Playboy. She's a Playboy playmate, glamour model. Posed nude a lot in Playboy, a lot of spreads, and she is unlike the first woman, she is actually naturally gifted. She actually has something close to like a double H cup. And yet, way back in the 80s, she was working on a 1976 Volkswagen bus. This occurred coincidentally in the parking lot of Playboy's offices. She was later saved by paramedics and Playboy security guards. And literally the only reason she survived is because of her enormously gifted boobas, I guess.
Ow.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I hope she wasn't wearing underwire when it happened, but I'm positive she was. And she was probably very, very bruised.
Oh, she was definitely bruised. She says as much. But she made a full recovery, and she was in a spread in a couple years later. Her boot was completely intact. So, it turns out that the woman's bosom, the fun bags, the sweater puppets, whatever you want to call them, are amazing, amazing things in more ways than one. And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. Wow. So, moving on from there, we are now going on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is the coach of the Washington Commanders, Jack Del Rio, who was fined $100,000, that's $100,000, by his team for comparing the George Floyd protest and the January 6th insurrection. Publicly.
Yeah, he has been weirdly posting on his Twitter. I don't know why he would have a Twitter, but posting about watching that Dinesh D'Souza movie that came out in the past few months.
The what is it called? The 10,000 Mules or whatever it is. Yeah.
2,000 Mules, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But decided at some point, I guess people probably noticed that, being a public figure. And yeah, he got asked about that stuff. Let's see. Wednesday, he defended a reply he made to Twitter 2 days earlier when he tweeted, "Love to understand the whole story about why the summer of riots, looting, burning, and the destruction of personal property is never discussed, but this is hashtag common sense."
Mm-hmm.
It's about gun control.
Mm-hmm.
The January 6th thing, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
He said that he felt there were two standards being applied and that he was just expressing his opinion. But in response to the final question of his news conference, Jack Del Rio called the U.S. Capitol invasion a dust-up, causing another controversy there.
Mm-hmm.
I apologized in a statement later Wednesday, saying, referencing that situation as a dust-up, for those that may not know that kind of term, that's like an old term for, I just got in a little fight. Mm-hmm. A harmless fight kind of thing. Referencing that situation as a dust-up was irresponsible, negligent, and I'm sorry, I stand by my comments condemning violence in communities across the country. I say that while also expressing my support as an American citizen for peaceful protests in our country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what else did he say here? He caused a lot of chaos with that kind of comment. And yeah, the head coach, Ron Rivera, put out a statement saying, let's see, "This morning I met with Coach Del Rio to express how disappointed I am in his comments on Wednesday. His comments do not reflect the organization's views and are extremely hurtful to our great community here in the DMV. as we saw last night in the hearings. What happened on the Capitol on January 6, 2021 was an act of domestic terrorism. A group of citizens attempted to overturn the results of a free and fair election. As a result, lives were lost and the Capitol building was damaged. Coach Del Rio did apologize for his comments on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And he understands the distinction between the events of that dark day and peaceful protests, which are a hallmark of our democracy. He does have the right to voice his opinion as a citizen of the United States. Most certainly is his constitutional right to do so. However, words of consequences and his words hurt a lot of people in our community. I want to make it clear that our organization will not tolerate any equivalency between those who demanded justice in the wake of George Floyd's murder and the actions of those on January 6th who sought to topple our government.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe also part of that is he was requiring or fining that coach, Jack Del Rio, $100,000 for those statements and is having that money sent to the U.S. Capitol Police Memorial Fund.
Nice. That is a nice touch on this.
Yeah, and it's like, first off, there wasn't much property destruction that during the George Floyd protests that wasn't done by either people that were taking advantage of the situation to steal shit and break shit, or the police.
Mm-hmm.
As John Oliver said on like one of the recent Last Week Tonight's, like, nobody has done, you know, worse PR for themselves since the George Floyd murder than police have all around this country.
Yeah.
And so the notion that people want them in schools and all this shit is like, no. Mm. No, they don't. They generally bring more chaos to wherever they go. Mm. And the George Floyd protests were not riots. Not until the cops showed up and made them into chaotic, you know, shit fests. But yeah. There you go.
Yeah. But he is not alone, because we've also got one other asshole of the week. Michigan's Republican candidate for governor, Ryan Kelly, who was arrested this week for his involvement in the January 6th insurrection.
So that's another candidate out of the race.
Yep. Michigan, remember, Michigan is also the state guys tried to kidnap their governor.
Yeah, and they got off scot-free.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was arrested by the FBI Thursday at his home in Allendale in western Michigan, was released after his arraignment without having to post bond. He understood to most of the judge's questions regarding his rights and responsibilities. The initial proceeding took place in a Grand Rapids federal courtroom, although charges were filed in Washington, D.C. These documents say he was part of a crowd that tried to disrupt the certification of President Biden's winner of the November 2020 election. They have photos and videos of him there.
Mm.
So yeah, there you go. That follows a week after they found that a number of the people that were running for governor on the GOP side had rampant fraudulent signatures on their ballots, on their whatever their forms for applying for that, and got dropped from the ballots. Thinning out that herd very quickly.
But fortunately, it's not all bad, because some heroes of the week, some pretty good ones, actually. First and foremost is Justine Lindsay, who is believed to be first openly transgender cheerleader for an NFL team with the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah. She, let's see, an Instagram posted 3 months ago. She shared that she is a transgender woman and also announced that she was joining the Top Cats, the cheerleading squad for the Carolina Panthers. Saying that her trans identity previously had been a secret to everyone except her family. So this was kind of her going out publicly. And said, this is big. I think more people need to see this. It's not because I want recognition. It's just to shed light on what's been going on in the world.
And on top of that, the House passed a gun control bill in the wake of the Buffalo and Uvalde shootings along party lines, with I believe 10 Republicans actually joining the Democrats in the majority.
Yeah, it was 223 to 204.
Yeah.
But yeah, probably not going to get anywhere on the Senate.
No.
Because Mitch McConnell will shoot that down.
It's got to be so demoralizing to go through all the work to put this all to a vote in the House, knowing that the Senate is just going to stomp on their fire.
Yeah. But it's basically sort of also them basically showing, it's like, yeah, look, we kind of, we, you know, we're doing the effort, and, you know, if these guys won't play along, then, you know, some, you know, vote others, you know,
yeah.
I guess. Or it's also just them kind of washing their hands of the thing. So, like, look, we did what we did, but these guys won't cooperate, I guess. I don't know. But
yeah. Possibility, too, yeah.
But, yeah. I believe the legislature, they're trying to make it, raising the federal age that's needed to purchase an assault rifle from 18 to 21, I believe is what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Yeah.
That's the biggest part of it, yeah.
Yeah. Improve, let's see. That's what the Senate is doing. Yeah, they are trying to, let's see, where is it at here? Oh, this is all about the Senate for some reason. Okay. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, increase the minimum age to buy semi-automatic weapons to 21.
Mm-hmm.
What else is in here? Includes incentives designed to increase...
about magazines.
Yeah.
Designed to increase the use of safe gun storage devices and creates penalties for violating safe storage requirements, providing for a fine imprisonment of up to 5 years if a gun is not properly stored. Is subsequently used by a minor to injure or kill themselves or another individual.
Mm-hmm.
Bills in the Biden administration's executive action banning fast action bump stock devices and ghost guns that are assembled without serial numbers.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so that is the end of that. Now to the proper show proper. And the first big story we'll be talking about is, yes, the very first January 6th committee hearing that was public took place Thursday evening at around 8 o'clock. And really, if anything, it's just like, yeah, there is no ambiguity anymore.
Mm-hmm.
None.
Yeah.
They
shared quite a few different things, like a video that had sort of the whole timeline of events,
mm-hmm.
as well as including body cam footage that had not been shown previously,
mm-hmm.
as well as police radio communication on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
They had footage of Bill Barr, Trump's AG, telling investigators in his on-camera deposition that he told Trump his allegations of election fraud were bullshit,
mm-hmm.
which he also put in his book. Ivanka Trump said that she trusted what Bill Barr had said.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, I respect Attorney General Barr, so I accepted what he was saying as far as there being no proof of election fraud.
Yeah.
Which made him post a hilarious post on his mm-hmm. His True Social page,
mm-hmm.
being like, I'm sure she was just being polite, but Bill Barr sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. It's like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
So, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, saying Vice President Mike Pence was being direct and wanting the military's help at the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
But the White House itself was very different. Mark Meadows wanted instead to shape a narrative that Trump was in control.
Mm-hmm.
Milley said that it reeked of politics, 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 and was a red flag.
Mm.
Liz Cheney said that Pennsylvania Rep. Scott Perry and multiple other Republican congressmen sought presidential pardons for the roles in attempting to overturn the 2020 election from the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And showed new texts between Sean Hannity and Kayleigh McEnany
mm-hmm.
about the events going on.
Yep.
They had Jason Miller saying on camera they told Trump in pretty blunt terms that he was going to lose. Trump lawyer Alex Canning affirming there was no evidence of widespread election fraud or the election being stolen.
Mm-hmm.
And they had footage of Proud Boys and Oath Keepers on camera saying they went to the Capitol that day because they believe that's what Trump wanted done. They felt he'd mm-hmm. asked them to do it. After Trump's stand back and stand by remark in a debate, membership mm-hmm. in the Proud Boys tripled.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god.
Yep.
And they showed plenty of videos and such of, you know, depositions and various things that went on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, and they very much went after Trump,
mm-hmm.
Saying that this was all his doing.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one directing all of this. Let's see. And yeah, saying that one of the biggest problems in this country continues to be people not operating from or believing any shared set of facts. As you could tell from what was happening on Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Speaking of which, all of the major networks except one was basically airing the whole thing. And literally the only one was Fox News. I mean, they would occasionally like cut to it. To try and make it portray it as if it was this boring thing that nobody cared about, unless, you know, you're watching two networks at the same time and you realize that they're actually cutting away from the footage when things get really violent.
Yeah.
Yeah. They often didn't have audio
mm-hmm.
on there and were just showing bits and just talking over things so that
they occasionally would show Cheney and the others just sort of looking like they're staring off into space when in reality everybody is watching the footage that's being shown on the back screen.
Yeah. Yeah, they did air the whole thing. It was on Fox Business.
Which nobody watches.
Yeah.
But
yeah, they even so much wanted to counter this that they went ad-free on Tucker Carlson's show.
And Hannity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did
so that they wouldn't channel switch.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had to have zero downtime during it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's because you people were involved.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I have seen, like, some furtive attempts by people just saying, like, oh, they manipulated the footage. No, they didn't.
No.
Mm-mm.
There's too much at stake. They would absolutely get caught.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so that happened. And amongst other things, it's kind of like it's... We know, for example, that apparently Donald and Ivanka apparently have hit a bump and their father-daughter relationship after, you know, Trump basically said that she was basically checked out by that point.
He no longer wants to date Ivanka.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of the Trumps, Donald, Don Jr., and Ivanka, next story, they're going to have to be giving a deposition to the New York Attorney General starting July 15th.
Yeah. That's when they'll be required to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And they have an agreement with him. Eric's not part of this because he's already given a deposition mm-hmm. 2 years ago, but Larger didn't say much.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's the other three's turn.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the only other thing they could do is stall longer if they somehow get their lawyers to persuade the state's highest court to step in, but mm-hmm. that doesn't seem likely at this point.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Moving on from there, so there are things that are happening at the Supreme Court right now. You are pretty much know pretty well about what it is, and tensions are high, emotions are high, respect, and apparently this week the police actually arrested an armed gentleman that was just outside of Justice Kavanaugh's house. Apparently the dude was, like, suicidal or something, and yeah.
Yeah, it got Mitch McConnell to try to be empathetic, figure out how that looks.
Yeah.
By being like, we need to pass this legislation now to get security for, you know, the SCOTUS judges.
Nope.
And it's like, while the Democrats wanted to, you know, gets gun control legislation passed. So it's like, oh, when you want something done, apparently it's a moral imperative, but when it's saving, you know, kids and mm-hmm. other people's lives. We can wait on that until it's advantageous for us. But yeah, I would say like they already have some means of having security. But this would, you know, add more to that. But it's like they caught this guy, so it works. The system works. You know, if he wants, he could be the good guy with the gun. See how that works out for him.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so that happened. Now we got this other story. Simone Biles and about 90 other women are filing charges. Well, not charges, but damage claims against the FBI for $1 billion. For those of you who don't know, these are women who were victims of the coach, Larry Nassar.
Yeah. And yeah, this was a whole thing that the whole thing is that he was reported to the FBI well before he did abuse a bunch of these women after 2015. And the FBI just failed to properly follow up on these claims against him and sort of allowed him to keep doing what he was doing for a few more years there. And yeah, they, the Justice Department announced in May that they wouldn't prosecute two FBI agents who, according to a government watchdog, lied and hid their missteps from authorities. But yeah, the, let's see, they, this is a result of, let's see, what's the thing called here? It's not a lawsuit, it's complaints filed under a law called the Federal Tort Claims Act. It allows people who suffer some kind of injury because of the wrongful or negligent behavior of a federal employee to file a claim against the government. If the agency denies the claim or doesn't respond in 6 months, the complainant can then file a civil lawsuit in U.S. District Court. A separate group of 13 women and girls who were also abused by Nassar filed similar claims in April. And yeah, he, let's see, an attorney in that case said he saw parallels with the settlement that the Justice Department reached with survivors and family members of the Parkland, Florida school shooting, who sued the FBI for failing to act on tips that the perpetrator was prone to violence of that shooting. So they're hoping that they get lucky in this instance, because as, let's see, gold medalist Michaela Maroney sent a statement, my fellow survivors and I were betrayed by a institution that was supposed to protect us. U.S. Olympic Committee, USA Gymnastics, the FBI, now the Department of Justice. It's clear that the only path to justice and healing is through the legal process. And yeah, so this will have to go through that process. But yeah, the it'll be interesting to see how this all turns out.
Yeah.
All right. So next up, a federal judge has ruled that Oklahoma's lethal injection method is perfectly constitutional. You're going to have to explain this one.
Yeah,
so they have a three-drug lethal injection method that, let's see here, attorneys for 28 death row inmates argued the first of the three drugs, the sedative midazolam, is not adequate to render an inmate unable to feel pain. It creates a risk of severe pain and suffering that violates U.S. Constitution's Eighth Amendment, prohibiting cruel and unusual punishment. As the judge said here, the prerequisites of a successful lethal injection challenge under the Eighth Amendment have been made clear by the Supreme Court, citing three earlier rulings on the death penalty. The plaintiff inmates have fallen well short of clearing the bar set by the Supreme Court. And yeah, let's see. One of the attorneys for the death row inmates said they're still assessing their options for an appeal to the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver. But yeah, that's sort of turning them down there on that instance. And yeah, I don't know. It's just lethal injection is just such a shitty way to go about this stuff. There's a Last Week Tonight episode on this specifically. I'm not sure if it's the Oklahoma's one of the states they talk about, but it's like the drugs they use are very expensive. They're in limited supply. And so much so that, you know, some of these drugs are in such limited supply that, you know, states are offering, like, I will just do a, you know, push you up against the wall and shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
The firing wall kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is like, when that's the more humane option,
mm-hmm.
that's...
There's something not right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, it's cheaper just to house these people for the rest of their lives than to kill them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Or... Yeah. So moving on from there. Yeah, so, Brooke, I bet you guys didn't know this, but Taser is actually a patent. It's actually copyrighted. That name is. Yeah, it's actually made by a company called Axon. And so as it turns out, Axon had this idea that they thought was so brilliant until they actually released it to everybody. And everybody looked at it and was like, what the hell were you people thinking? They wanted to create a Taser drone.
What?
Yeah, and then it basically just was a huge shitstorm, and then they pulled it out, and their whole ethics board just straight up resigned.
Yeah, the whole thing here is that they were initially coming up with plans to develop a Taser-equipped drone.
Mm-hmm.
That, let me see here... That was going to be, the board had voted 8-4 a few weeks ago to recommend Axon not proceed mm-hmm. with a pilot of the Taser drone. They had mm-hmm. concerns about introducing weaponizing drones in over-policed communities of color.
Mm-hmm.
But after the shooting in Uvalde, Texas, the company announced it was beginning development of the drone mm-hmm. anyway. And yeah, the CEO, Rick Smith, had said that he made the idea public in part because he was catastrophically disappointed in the response by police who didn't move in to kill the suspect mm-hmm. for more than an hour. Which mm-hmm. is like, they couldn't get in the door, your stupid drone wouldn't be able to get him either.
Yeah.
Unless you put a gun on there that could shoot through, you know, the windows, assuming that it wasn't a, you know, classroom that was not, you know, on the edges of the building.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the board issued a rare rebuke of the project, saying it was a dangerous idea that went far beyond the initial proposal the board had reviewed for a Taser-equipped police drone. Said it had pleaded with the company to pull back before the announcement, that many of them believed it was trading on the tragedy of the Uvalde and Buffalo shootings.
Yeah.
He had rejected that idea in an interview with AP last week, saying he was pressing ahead because he believed a Taser drone could be a viable solution to save lives, which is what all these tech idiots do.
Mm-hmm.
They contended the idea to need to be shared as part of a public conversation about school safety, effective ways for police to safely confront attackers. But yeah, then 9 of those 12 members of the ethics board resigned, saying they had lost faith in Axon's ability to be a responsible partner. Saying, we wish it had not come to this. Each of us joined this board in the belief that we could influence the direction of the company in ways that would help to mitigate the harms that policing technology can sow and better capture any benefits.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, ethics don't mean crap when dollars are on them, so...
But yeah, as a result of that, they have put the drone back on the drawing board.
Mm.
Hopefully in the dumpster where it belongs.
Yeah. Next up, Geico. You know them as the car insurance company that makes funny commercials. Well, they're about to become a punchline because turns out that they may have to pay a woman They may have to pay a woman $5.2 million because she got an STD in one of their insured cars.
Yeah. See. Hey. Go ahead.
Was kind of funny because it was with arbitration, and didn't Geico completely fail to show up for the thing? So the arbiter is like, okay, yeah, we rule in this woman's favor, and now Geico is doing what so many people who have gotten fucked over during arbitration against big corporations, and now they're feeling the pinch on the other side of the aisle. They're trying to get it undone, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to appeal it. saying they hadn't been given a chance to defend itself, violating its constitutional rights to due process, access to the courts. But in its ruling this week, two judges in the Missouri Court of Appeals, Western District, said Geico had numerous chances to act on its own behalf. They noted that MO had initially submitted a claim to Geico more than a year ago. Mm. In February 2021, the woman sent the company a copy of the lawsuit she was about to file against the insured man. At the time, she also offered to settle the claim for $1 million. The third judge on the appeals panel concurred with the court's ruling, but he also said Geico hadn't been given a meaningful opportunity to participate in the suit before the judgment was rendered.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is a whole weird thing. But yeah, she goes by, in these court papers, the initials M.O. Says mm-hmm. a man identified as M.B. infected her with the human papillomavirus, or HPV, when they had unprotected sex in his 2014 Hyundai Genesis.
Yeah.
She says the man was negligent, didn't tell her about his health diagnosis, despite having a throat cancer tumor that was confirmed to be positive for HPV.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Geico told the woman its auto insurance coverage didn't apply because the damages claimed did not arise out of the normal use of the vehicle. Hell of a thing.
Oh, no. How many people do you know who have sex on the regular have not had sex in a vehicle? I would say it is normal use of the automobile.
Hell, it should be a selling point right now.
Right?
Well, maybe not for...
Can't afford an apartment? You can still get laid if you have a car.
As long as it's off, maybe.
Yeah.
Those might be very expensive, depending on how long it takes with the gas on. But, yeah, let's see. MO's now won three victories in Missouri, but in April 2021, Geico sued both MO and MB in federal court, asking the court to rule that the insurance company isn't liable for the woman being infected with HPV, that it doesn't have a duty to defend the man from her claims against him.
Mm-hmm.
They say the car owner's claims for coverage should be dismissed because they're barred by a number of legal doctrines, including fraud, collusion, illegality, lashes, and unclean hands.
Mm-hmm.
MO says Geico acted in bad faith by refusing to defend the man who owns the car, despite multiple requests, by refusing to settle her claim. Says the man was insured against his personal liability arising from his negligence and actions involving his automobile, and that makes Geico responsible.
Mm.
So this federal case is set for a jury trial, which is currently slated to begin in a Kansas City courtroom in October. Since Geico filed its federal suit more than a year ago, well over 100 docket entries have been made involving sort of further evidence and notes and such being added to that, so... That's a hell of a case there.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Congrats to Geico.
Yeah.
We're potentially on the verge of a landmark suit.
Yep. All right. So next up, we're now moving on to the entertainment show. And believe it or not, we've actually got a substantial one this time. First and foremost, the Foo Fighters are going to be doing two tribute concerts in honor of late drummer Taylor Hawkins in September.
That'll be good for them, I think.
Yeah, this includes... Yeah, it's going to be a September 3rd concert at Wembley Stadium in London, as well as a September 27th concert at the Kia Forum in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
They will have Dave Grohl, Nate Mendel, Chris Shiflett, Pat Smear, and Rami Jaffe come together with the Hawkins family to celebrate the life, music, and love of their husband, father, brother, and bandmates with the Taylor Hawkins tribute concerts.
Mm.
And yeah, they will hold the shows. They are planning to announce the lineups for them pretty shortly.
Mm-hmm.
As well as places you can sign up to receive information on ticketing links and sale dates and all that kind of shit. But yeah, he's a fundamental member of the Foo Fighters.
Mm.
One of the biggest bands in rock for the past 25 years.
Yep. Absolutely. And honestly, I mean... It's amazing how well they did when you consider that they were born out of the ashes of one of the most influential rock bands that ever existed. And actually literally started out as like a one-man project and just took off the way they did. Moving on from there, Paramount Pictures is facing a copyright lawsuit over Top Gun Maverick. Now, this one I hadn't heard about.
Yeah, this involves The family of the man whose magazine article inspired the 1986 film Top Gun is suing Paramount Pictures over copyright infringement claims. Shosh and Yuval Yonah, the widow and son of Ehud Yonah, say they exercised their right to recover the copyright to the story in 2018. That took effect in 2020, and that Paramount did not reacquire the film rights before releasing Top Gun Maverick. Saying here on January 24th, 2020, the copyright to the story thus reverted to the Yonahs under the Copyright Act, but Paramount deliberately ignored this. The Mingus knows that the statute, and Paramount says those claims are without merit, and we will defend ourselves vigorously. LBS also sent around a article in 1983. California Magazine published an article by Ehud Yonah called Top Guns, told the story of Navy pilots in a remarkably vivid and cinematic fashion. Paramount secured the film rights to the article weeks later, and the blockbuster film Top Gun was released in 1986. Yeah, they since then opted to recover the rights to the copyright, which are permitted to do under the law after 35 years. That part of the law gives authors the ability to financially benefit from the creations and participate in some meaningful way in the fruits of their labor. Would not prevent Paramount from continuing to distribute works created when they own the copyright, such as Top Gun, but it would require a studio to obtain the rights again if they want to produce any other films based on that story after the copyright expired. And so, yeah, according to the lawsuit, Paramount responded to a cease and desist letter sent by the Yonahs in May, denying that Top Gun Maverick was obviously derivative of Yonahs' magazine story, arguing that the film was sufficiently completed by January 4th, 2020. And they alleged the work on Top Gun Maverick didn't wrap up until 2021, 1 year after they claimed the film rights were no longer owned by Paramount. There you go.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. I never really liked the original. I just didn't. I love the soundtrack, but the original Top Gun movie just did nothing for me.
I liked it for a year, a lot. It was the only tape that my uncle had with his Betamax player. That's dating, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, so, yeah, ladies and gentlemen.
I like the game more on the NES. I like the game more.
I mean, wasn't the game basically just, it's been a while, but, for those of you who are a little young may not remember, there was a time when, there were not just VHS, but there was also Betamax and Laserdisc and just a bunch of different formats. But, all right, now we're moving on to trailer. The first is we got the official trailer for Black Adam starring Dwayne Johnson.
Yep. This trailer seems all right. Doesn't really explain much about Black Adam himself. Other than, like, he became a god at some point.
Yeah.
Of sorts. Well,
if I remember correctly, he's basically, like, gets his powers the same way Shazam does.
He was, like, the original Shazam. And so he has basically the same outfit. Just black.
Yep.
Shocking.
Pretty much,
But yeah, they put this out and then they had a whole big segment on the Summer Game Fest. That was kind of just hilarious as he hawked his energy drink at the same time as trying to argue that Black Adam is better than Superman. Potentially, I guess, suggesting that he wants a movie where he beats the shit out of Superman. I'm sure that could be good. I don't know, but this is out October 21st.
Yeah, sounds neat. Then we got the official trailer for Prey, which is the origin story of the Predator.
Yeah, interesting, right?
And it ends up like it shows up like 300 years ago in the Comanche Nation. And yeah, it is interesting. I will say that.
Yeah. And yeah, it's an interesting like series, I believe. I believe it's a series. I'm not sure if it's a series. They don't mention here, but yeah, that it'll be on Hulu. So you'll be able to check that out August 5th. on who it is.
Neato. Yeah. It definitely looks neat. So it has my interest. And then we have a trailer for the next Disney animated film, Strange World. Yeah, not sure about this one.
Yeah, it looks neat.
I haven't seen it.
It's kind of a new movie kind of about like that kind of 50s sci-fi weird whole style. The whole intro is very much a kind of where they would do like news bits in front of movies.
Yeah.
Style to it, but then it gets to the actual planet itself and it's just full of a lot of weird as creatures and such going on.
Mm.
That it's kind of got some nice style to it. Super colorful and all that. I don't know what the plot is really, other than I think it's these people that are going out to explore in space, kind of run up on this planet and kind of try to survive, I guess.
Yeah, try to survive in like a death world, I guess. That's definitely what it looks like.
Yeah. Survive in a death world, or strange world, as they might say.
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of just very fantastical. Weird thing is the trailer says fall 2022 at the end, but the text here on the YouTube video says November. So it must be out in November.
Yeah. I guess.
Looks pretty neat.
Yeah. So moving on from there, folks, we're going to wrap it up here at the end because with a fairly substantial bit of teasers and trailers, because Netflix did their Geeked Week this week and, you know, releasing stuff for, you know, all their comic and anime and game-related nerdery. The first thing that they announced is that the popular Korean zombie show All of Us Are Dead was renewed for a second season, which is unusual because, well, that first season kind of wrapped everything up pretty nicely. So where they're going to go with it, I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, they probably have some things they can do because, yeah, remember this is a thing that is based on a Korean webtoon.
Yeah.
Webcomic kind of thing. So
yeah.
I'd imagine they didn't just get to a thing where things are kind of okay.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we're done.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on from there, we've also got a teaser for Castlevania Nocturne, which, of course, is the follow-up to the other animated Castlevania show, which is headed by the same people. This time it's going to be talking about Richter Belmont, which some of you may know him if you're Castlevania fans from Symphony of the Night and Rondo of Blood. Yeah, it definitely looks good. Hopefully it can keep up the quality that the other series did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we have the Cuphead show. They released some new episodes. Yeah, season two with some new episodes. I'm guessing it's going to be as zany as the first episodes were. Because that show is very much in the style of like old school episodic cartoons. Just barely a plot together that basically just is an excuse for a bunch of gags.
Yeah, there is a bit of a plot as the devil wants their souls.
Oh yeah.
Well, he's continually trying to get it, but their bumbling nature somehow keeps him safe.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're working on season two. No idea when it's going to happen, but they've been working on it.
Yeah. And then we got the trailer for the Cyberpunk 2077 anime series, Cyberpunk Edgerunners, which is being done by Studio Trigger, the same people between, you know, Kill la Kill and BNA Brand New Animal. They also, you know, and before that, even though they named as such, they were heavily involved in Tengen, Toppa, Gurren Lagann. And it definitely looks like it with that, you know, you can look at the coloring style and say, like, yep, that's definitely them.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's kind of a prequel of sorts.
Kind of. The thing, though, is that, remember, the Cyberpunk universe itself is based on a tabletop RPG, so they could pretty much tell any story they want as long as it's in this universe.
It's supposed to be a standalone 10-episode story about a street kid trying to survive in Night City.
Yep.
Technology and body modification obsessed city of the future.
Mm-hmm.
Having everything to lose, he stays alive by becoming an edge runner. Mercenary outlaw, also known as a cyberpunk.
Yeah. And it does have, some of the gangs from the game in both the trailer and one of the teasers they released. It definitely is in, like, the 2077 Melo, at least. Yeah.
It seems like it'll be out in September.
Yeah. And speaking of game-related animations, Dragon Age Absolution. Those of you who know now, they recently announced that the Dragon Age 4 is going to be Dragon Age Wolfsbane. Or was it
Dreadwolf?
Dreadwolf, yes, it was Dreadwolf. And so now they're going to start releasing Dragon Age stuff now, including this animated series, which it looks okay. I guess the issue is the animation style looks kind of bland. But, I'm willing to give it a shot. I love the Dragon Age universe.
It kind of fits the style of Dragon Age.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a bland fantasy thing.
Or at least the comic books. The comic book spinoffs definitely look like this.
This will be 6 episodes, debuting in December.
Mm-hmm.
Set in Tevinter.
Yeah.
Empire within in the Dragon Age universe.
Hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, a bunch of new characters in it.
If it's taking place in Tevinter, it's probably going to be somehow related to Dreadwolf, because apparently that game's going to be mostly taking place in the Tevinter Imperium. So, I guess we'll see. But yeah, moving on from there, we got a nice little surprise here. Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosity.
Yeah, this is his, horror anthology.
Mm-hmm.
8 blood-curdling tales of horror. Told by some of the most revered horror creators, including the directors of The Babadook, Splice, Mandy, and others.
Oh, yeah.
And let's see, Mandy, The Empty Man, Splice, The Babadook, The Vigil, Twilight, Hannibal,
mm-hmm.
A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Mm-hmm.
It has, Eric Andres in one of these, Crispin Glover, Rupert Grint. Andrew Lincoln, Kate Micucci, Charlene Yee. We've got some decent cast of actors in this.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like that'll be out sometime later this year.
Mm.
No date for it yet.
All right. Then we've got another anime series talking about Junji Ito Maniacs, Japanese Tales of the Macabre, which is a... Is it an anime or is it a live-action series?
It's anime.
Yeah, based on the notoriously disturbing manga stories by Junji Ito. This is, of all the manga artists I've ever encountered, this is the one guy I know of who can really get under my skin.
Yeah.
He is really good at, body horror and stuff like that, that is just legitimately, just makes your skin crawl.
Yeah. And he says he's picked 20 of his works to get the animated treatment. And is introducing 3 of them here. Tomy.
Mm-hmm. That's one of his earlier stories.
Yeah, I'm trying to see. Soichi and the Hanging Balloons.
Yeah.
He sort of runs through artwork and such from those particular manga.
Yeah.
Sort of explaining things.
Mm-hmm.
And seems like it'll be out next year at some point.
Yeah, sounds neat. Sounds neat. All right, and then we also got the trailer for Netflix's Resident Evil series, because, they got their own version as well.
Yeah, I got more of it, showing off especially Lance Reddick's Wesker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they definitely go in on the corporation thing. Mm-hmm. They show bits, a company besieged by scandal is trying to reinvent itself.
Mm-hmm.
They are hoping to change the world with their new product.
Mm-hmm.
And find out that the drug they were making contains the T-virus.
What a shock!
Yeah, so yeah, that'll be starting July 14th.
Mm-hmm.
And you can check that out, so not too much longer.
Mm. Yeah. And then we got something that has long been awaited. I mean, this is something that people have been waiting for decades now. The Sandman will premiere August 5th.
Yep. Yeah, it shows the main character Morpheus,
mm-hmm.
or Dream.
Yep.
I think in personification of dreams and all that is not reality, as he is trapped and imprisoned by a group of sorcerers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of the Endless, a group of seven beings that represent natural forces, mm-hmm. or aspects such as death or desire.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, as he's trying to escape from captivity and return to his realm. And we find out that, yeah, it's fallen into disrepair.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating how they do this series, because the thing about the Sandman, the series, is that, about the comic specifically, is because of how esoteric the overall story arcs are. Like, Dream and the others all are a lot of, like, there are a lot of stories where they're barely in them. You know, because, you know, the nature of the series was such that Gaiman basically would write basically any kind of story he wanted, you know, and then sort of add, you know, he could sort of put the Dream and Desire and, you know, all the others in there any way he wanted to. Like, there's this one I remember of this one woman who's like a runaway, and she ends up like in a getting involved in a serial killer convention. Yeah, it's weird stories like that. There's another one of ghosts who haunt a you know, an old like British boarding school. Yeah, it's odd, but it's really good. Good stuff. But, yeah. But yeah, that'll be, premiere 5th. And finally, last thing for the night, we got the trailer for the Tekken anime, Tekken Bloodline.
Yep. As they, show some clips here of the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just gonna have Jin and various others. I think it's like a younger Jin.
Yep.
So like earlier part of the series are a prequel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's going to be neat to see.
Oh, yeah. Definitely looks neat.
Probably better than the live-action movies they tried to make.
Probably so far superior. It won't even be funny. But yeah, so yeah, we're going to wrap it up there, folks. We've had ourselves a heck of a show. I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or really any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. So, yeah, we're going to wrap it up there. As always, people of Ukraine and Russia, we hope that that war will end very soon. And as always, even though the probably on the outs of the COVID epidemic, well, the pandemic at least, if you have not yet been vaccinated, I would strongly encourage you to. And if you have been vaccinated but have not gotten your booster and you believe that that's something you should do, do not hesitate. They are very easy to get. And yeah, we will wrap it up there. Join us next week. We'll have another whole lot of show for you. And till then, we're going to turn out the lights off and lock the door. See you guys next week. Later.